Mankind is of the fourth kingdom, and as such, in his organic condition of mind, he cannot directly perceive, receive, or understand the mental impressions of either the upper three spiritual centers or kingdoms, or the lower three earthly spiritual centers or kingdoms. As explored throughout the article below, each person has an animal nature, and because man's perceptive vision is locked into the fourth kingdom, man can't see the animal faces that are embedded into his abdomen. Why? Because you can only see within the limitations of the frequency of the fourth kingdom of man. There has always existed cultures that are more in harmony with man's lower earthly nature. The foundation of indigenous cultures such as exist in Africa, South America, the Hawaiians, and among Native Americans, which were based upon closer attachments to the earth, enabled the native people of a mature mind to directly perceive and interact with their own animal natures. In the below subheading entitled Thought Animated Symbols, I make reference to the DVD movie entitled The Emerald Forest that portrays the ability of indigenous peoples to directly interact with their lower animal natures. What man does not understand is that the different races correspond to different spheres of mind in the pattern of the tree of life, and when the soul incarnates into these races, the soul is then better able to work on the spheres of mind associated with the race it is an expression of. Each of the races is of a unique vibratory expression within the spectrum of the frequency associated with humanity and the fourth kingdom. And as a person evolves within a race perspective, they are then able to develop the core attributes of that race within their mind, and these developed attributes are then transferred into the higher soul mind. What this means is that when the Europeans invaded the Americas, an important key to higher consciousness and understanding was possessed by the native peoples who they portrayed as ignorant and heathen, and in a number of legal rulings, Native Americans were declared not even human. Because each race possesses greater access and manifestation within the spectrum of frequencies the race is an expression of, those attributes of mind that can be portrayed as indigenous to a given race are more easily developed within that race. And those who develop these racial attributes possess abilities that cannot be developed apart from that racial culture. Yet, a person who has lived an indigenous life and has developed to the degree that they are able to tap into their own lower animal nature is able to more easily tap into these experiences in lives where they are no longer living an indigenous earth-focused life. And when it is understood that the lower three earthly kingdoms are the opposite polarity half of the upper three heavenly kingdoms, this interaction between the upper and lower is of the utmost importance in the deepening and expansion of mind from the perspective of the fourth kingdom of man. A person living in England would find it difficult to impossible to develop those attributes that are grounded in an earth-centered culture, such as the Native American culture. And those people who evolved within the framework of an earth-centered culture, such as the Native Americans, saw and perceptively understood what the white person raised in Europe was virtually blind to. In the same way that among the white race there are those who can be portrayed as scholars who possess greater understanding, and these people with highly developed minds live and exist among the greater mass of people who possess no higher understanding. The same reality is also true among the more indigenous cultures, as much as in the predominantly white race. Within these indigenous cultures, there exist people who have evolved their thinking and understanding from the perspective of the laws and forces of the earth, which exit as the opposite polarity of the laws and forces of what we would portray as the heavenly. And in the development of wholeness, see wholeness of mind and being, the interaction of the opposite polarities is of the utmost importance. In the case of the Native Americans, one of the primary problems was seen in the fact that the highly developed indigenous scholars' minds had no means to communicate with the ignorance of the white European settlers. And this inability to communicate continues into this present day. While my own soul has lived a number of indigenous lives in Africa, in the 1800s I lived as a Native American who was conscious of my own and others' lower animal natures. But there was simply no means to convey this important body of self-knowledge to the white Europeans who were shackled to ignorance by both their culture and dogmatic religion. With respect to the evolution of the lower earthly centers in the mind of man, an interesting statement is found in the Encyclopedia Britannica where it states, "The term shamanism comes from the Manchu Tungus word aman. The noun is formed from the verb a to know. Thus, a shaman is literally one who knows. The shamans recorded in historical ethnographies have included women, men, and transgender individuals of every age from middle childhood onward. Thus, the key here would be to evolve the lower centers of the mind to where the person was able to know and understand the lower earthly forces and laws of mind and consciousness. In his natural organic condition of mind, man is often totally ruled over by his lower animal nature. See organic man ruled over by his lower animal nature. To the degree that he can rightly be portrayed as beasts who walk in the form of man, see animals that walk in the form of man. Because man's thinking, which is developed in accord with the natural laws, is in accord with the progression of the seven notes of an octave, see the application of the law of octaves in the Trinity. His motivational thoughts are conceived and formed in his lower earthly animal nature that is beyond his organic ability to directly interact with. And with the natural twisting of the octave progression taking place as the thoughts and impressions are raised up from the interval of the third center into the fourth, which, without the interjection of higher consciousness, will cause the progression of the thought octave to be turned back and returned to the earthly spheres of mind. And when rightly understood, this process of the thoughts and impressions being turned back to their earthly source in the twisting of the octave progression is allegorically presented as the power of Satan, which can be portrayed as the gravity of mind that causes all thoughts and impressions to remain earthbound. The frequencies of the upper spiritual centers are related to man's higher spiritual nature, and when people meditate on the sixth spiritual center, which is the balance of the three upper centers, they often become immersed in the vital life force of the upper centers. In practice, meditation can be portrayed as chakra gazing, and since the upper three centers are the upper half of the lower three centers, we can also portray the practice of chakra gazing as a form of head sex that, like physical sex, releases bioenergy and endorphins into the body, which means that we can portray spiritual sex as bringing the power centers in both the head and the genitals into a simultaneous orgasm or release of bioenergy. In many ways, each incarnation of the soul can be rightly portrayed as a breath of the soul. In the same way that each breath is unique to all the other breaths, we have each arrived at our present station in life by virtue of many soul breaths. In the same way that our physical breath begins with the taking in of oxygen through the nostrils and the head, and this oxygen-enriched breath is then brought down into the lower body in a soul breath, the spiritual consciousness of the upper three kingdoms brings higher spiritual vibrational impressions into that soul's lower earthy natures, where under the right conditions, the higher impressions can become infused with their opposite polarity of the lower three kingdoms, and brought together in the common ground of the physical body and consciousness, where each of the upper heavenly kingdoms are able to directly interact with their opposite lower earthly kingdoms that are in opposite polarity. And this is of the utmost importance. In the same way that our heart has two halves that must work together to maintain the body in a healthful condition, each of the upper three spiritual centers, chakras, have a lower half, and no real soul advancement can be attained until the upper and lower halves are functioning together. But since these spiritual centers can only express themselves in mind, the upper and lower can only be brought together when the right, male, and left, female, columns of what is portrayed as the outer columns of mind, which are portrayed as the tree of duality, aka tree of knowledge of good and evil, are brought together in the center column of the tree of life. The allegorical account in Genesis portrays the fruit, mental impressions of the tree of duality is bringing death to the eater thereof, because the thoughts and impressions of the divided male or female spheres of mind are incomplete and devoid of wholeness, which division is unable to manifest the whole in the center and the tree of life. The tree of life portrays the 12 spheres of mind functioning together as O&E, which enables the seven spiritual centers to manifest the wild light of the soul and ultimately the Logos, mind of God. When rightly understood, the upper three, heavenly, kingdoms are the upper halves of the lower three, earthly, kingdoms. In the same way that the soul is the perfect harmonious balance of male and female, each of the lower three, earthly, kingdoms, or chakras, are the opposite half polarities of the three upper, heavenly, kingdoms or chakras, all of which must achieve wholeness and oneness in the center, which is the fourth kingdom of man. When the scriptures use the term Son of Man, What is being portrayed is the child of the kingdom that achieves the subsequent stages of birth by attaining the oneness of the mind as portrayed in the pattern of the tree of life. But what this also means is that unless the soul is embryonically projected into the physical body where this exchange between the seven kingdoms can take place within the environment of the common ground of the fourth kingdom, no advancement or soul evolution can be achieved. Why? Because soul advancement is dependent upon wholeness, and wholeness can only be achieved by mankind walking the path that consciously achieves wholeness. And wholeness requires the interaction of the seven kingdoms, spiritual power centers, through the 12 spheres of mind, and the interaction of the outer divided male and female columns of the tree of knowledge within the spectrum of the tree of life. And what makes this equation of mind and life especially difficult for most religious leaders and authorities to understand is that because of their inner divided nature, no advancement of the upper heavenly centers can take place without a corresponding advancement in the lower earthly centers. Which means that any attempt to deny or inhibit the lower centers in the endeavor to make spiritual gains, that is, the suppression of the appetites of the lower centers, is doomed to failure. Further, the New Age rhetoric that I am a spiritual being having a physical experience is also in grave error, as is the Eastern/Theosophical concept that the physical body is merely a vessel that is discarded at death, and a new body is then taken up in a future incarnation. I have heard it explained in comparison to the physical body that when you buy a new car, you get rid of the old one, which analogy is a lie when it is understood that the consciousness of the old car is brought forth into the new car, thereby creating the illusion of a new car with the same consciousness of the discarded car. When the pre-Nicene Church Father Origen stated that every soul comes into this world strengthened by the victories or weakened by the defeats of its previous life, Origen, De Principis, what he was actually stating is that the consciousness of your soul's past is transferred into your present life, and this fact of life remains true until the consciousness of the lower nature of the body is refined, evolved, and transformed. The formation of our lower earthly/animal consciousness, as explored in the above subheadings of this article, which presents the blueprint of the mind as patterned in the tree of life, in the same way that the seven kingdoms exist within God and are the vibrational colors associated with the seven kingdoms that together make up and manifest white light, each soul is as a vertical slice of creation that is holographically patterned and replicated into all the attributes of the whole. And in the same way that each soul which is created in the image of God is a vertical slice of creation containing the seven kingdoms, each soul-generated personality that is portrayed in the original gospel teachings as a male or female image of the soul, see the foundation of the soul and the threefold self, is a vertical slice of their soul. Therefore, each of our souls that are beings of white light also possess the seven kingdoms which are associated with each of the colors of the rainbow that is present within the spectrum of white light, as well as the seven notes that make up the octave. Man, as an embryonic image of his soul that was created in the image of God, not only possess the seven kingdoms within each of our own mind and body, but man inherits the condition of evolution of his soul's lower, earthly, animal nature, which lower animal consciousness becomes restored in each incarnation as his physical embryonic body is reformed in the womb of his physical mother. Why is each soul's lower animal consciousness restored in the body of each incarnation of the soul? If you did not inherit your own lower earthly/animal nature in each life, then you could not evolve and grow the light of your own soul that is a vertical slice of the seven kingdoms which exist within the mind of God, which your soul was imbued with when it was created in the image of God. All soul advancement and spiritual evolution is accomplished as each of the seven kingdoms independently evolve and are then brought together in the center. The center fourth kingdom of man is advanced by each person's ability to balance the divided upper three and lower three kingdoms together in the center through the male and female interactions of the outer columns of what is portrayed as the tree of duality. Which means that in each life you must inherit your own soul's lower earthly nature, and in each life you continue where the previous soul-generated personalities left off. Why? Because your soul's lower earthly nature is the reflective half of your soul's upper spiritual nature, and it is the balanced wholeness of the upper spiritual and the lower earthly natures/kingdoms that must be evolved, in order for that soul to advance and manifest greater light. Each time the soul generates an embryonic image and incarnates into this earthly life, all that the soul has accomplished is brought into the equation of that life in the birth of that person. In the words of the pre-Nicene Church Father Origen, every soul comes into this world strengthened by the victories or weakened by the defeats of its previous life. Origen, De Principis. How is this accomplished? How can the victories and defeats of that soul's previous lives be manifest in the latest incarnation of that soul? In what can be portrayed as spiritual DNA, see spiritual DNA and the allotment of talents to the invited guests, and also spiritual DNA and the sower and the seed. The evolutionary level of that soul's lower earthly nature is manifest in what can be portrayed as its level of a covert or union/marriage, as the opposite half of that soul's upper spiritual nature is manifest from life to life in the evolution of each soul. And this level of soul evolution is how the statement is fulfilled. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. Gal 6:7. And this is why some people are portrayed as invited guests in the parable of the call to the wedding feast. See the call to the wedding banquet. And this is why Saint Jerome wrote, the doctrine of transmigration, reincarnation, has been secretly taught from ancient times to small numbers of people as a traditional truth which was not to be divulged, and this is why each person receives a different number of talents, see allotment of talents, when their soul incarnates into this life in the fourth kingdom, which is the center of the seven kingdoms that together manifest the white light of the soul. In the approximate year of 178 of our common era, Celsus, the Epicurean philosopher and opponent of the church, published a rather embarrassing work in opposition to Christianity known as the True Word or Discourse. It is said that this work was so widely published and used by the pagan world as an attack on the church, that 70 years after its publication, the True Word was still so widely circulated that the church Father Origen, 184 to 254, was commissioned by Saint Ambrosius to refute this attack by the pagan philosopher Celsus. Therefore, what is presented in this reply to Celsus and the True Word was the official reply of the church to the allegations of the pagan attack, which means that a person seeking to understand the teachings of the pre-Nicene Church will find the foundation of the more pure church presented in this important document. Therefore, this publication and the reply by the Church Father Origen is so important to modern-day Christians who are attempting to bypass the corruption of the church by a series of Roman emperors beginning in the 4th century, that it should be a starting place for all sincere seekers of truth and the way. What was the teachings of the church prior to the takeover by a series of Roman emperors who dictated what beliefs were acceptable for the Christian to embrace? In examination of this document, the modern Christian must initially ask, who today would accuse the Christian church of being a secret system? The only answer is that no one in modern times would portray the church as a secret system. Why? Because the church today has lost its spiritual essence and, after being spiritually castrated by a series of Roman emperors, is a mere shadow of its former self over the first 3 centuries of its existence. Therefore, it is important for us to recognize that to the spiritual detriment of the modern believer, the most spiritual concepts and teachings of the pre-Nicene Church remains condemned as heresy by the modern church, and therefore such an allegation as a secret system would be unheard of in our present time. When Celsus questioned why sinners were even tolerated in the pre-Nicene Church, he was merely affirming the Apostle Paul's warning when he commanded, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers." 2 Cor 6:14. Unbelievers are not atheists, but rather, those who fail to live their lives in accord with the essential gospel teachings and lifestyle. And Paul affirmed this position to the degree that the congregation of believers are commanded not even to eat with sinners, that is, "But now I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother, who is sexually immoral, or covetous, or an idolater, or a reveler, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person." 1 Cor 5:11. Yet, the modern church, which is very much secular and institutionalized, not only opens their doors to sinners, but does not even require a change of mind and lifestyle, repentance from their sinful ways. And while these people may profess to be believers, Their actions and thoughts of the heart reveal them to be unbelievers.
Why?
Unbelievers are those who, because of their carnal thinking and lifestyle, which is totally controlled by their lower animal and earthly consciousness, are spiritually undeveloped and do not have a solid spiritual connection with God. They may profess a belief in the Lord, they may demonstrate the outward appearance of a religious person, they may even be a priest or member of the clergy, but because their heart and mind is controlled by their lower earthly consciousness and focused on the things of this world, their condition is carnal, and they are said to be of the flesh rather than the spirit. To a spiritual church, these unbelievers who put on the appearance of being a Christian are in fact an anchor to the soul of the church and cause it to be grounded in the error and the dark ignorance of this world. Being sinners, their condition is one of spiritual sickness. They are incomplete and not whole, and unable to connect with God in the true spiritual sense of the original gospel teachings is restored at. As both Celsus and the Apostle Paul warns, if they are in too great a number, they will bring about the death and demise of the church itself. In the end, the warning of Celsus, which merely reflected that same warning found in the epistles of Paul, proved correct. And the church father Origen, who was commissioned by the church to refute Celsus, has himself been condemned as a heretic, even though Origen was one of the greatest saints and enlightened holy men in the history of the church. Who was Origen? Origen is called the most prominent of all the church fathers, Encyclopedia Britannica, and was considered by Jerome to be the greatest teacher of the church after the apostles. Saint Gregory of Nyssa called him the prince of Christian learning in the 3rd century. In his Introduction to the Criticism of the New Testament by Dr. F. H. Scrivener, one of the ablest of modern-day biblical scholars and critics, writes of Origen, "Origen is the most celebrated biblical critic of antiquity. His is the highest name among the critics and expositors of the early church. He is perpetually engaged in the discussion of various readings of the New Testament and employs language in describing the then existing state of the text, which would be deemed strong if applied even to its present condition, after the changes which 16 more centuries must needs have produced. Seldom have such warmth of fancy and so bold a grasp of mind been united with the lifelong, patient industry which procured for this famous man the honorable appellation of Adamantius." The biblical scholar Westcott says of the church father Origen that, "We have not yet made good the positions which he marked out as belonging to the domain of Christian philosophy, religious thought in the West," page 252. A government church, that is, a quasi-secular institutionalized church, not only welcomes sinners, but its strength and continued existence depends upon a large body of quasi-adherents that Celsus calls sinners, and what Paul refers to as unbelievers, where a spiritual or living church must be accessed through man's spiritual nature, an innate spiritual nature that is dormant in those who are carnal in their thinking and lifestyle. The authority of an institutionalized church is very much of this world, and it is necessary that its members remain at a level below and in mental subjection to its body of pseudo-priests and clergy. Genuine followers of the Christ would have nothing to do with the likes of Constantine, and neither would they enter into a covenant with the secular powers of this world. Therefore, with respect to the question as to how high the presence of these sinners was and is a detriment of the modern believer, because what is portrayed as the milk of the gospel which Celsus found fault with as the deception taught to those portrayed as sinners that comprise the body of faith-based believers, Origen acknowledged that this exoteric Christian doctrine was preached in the churches for the simple-minded and for the ears of the common crowd who are led on to live better lives by their belief, while the spiritual esoteric Christian doctrine, which revealed the sacred mysteries of God to those who were cleansed from the defilements of this world, was suppressed by the carnal clergy who took control of the church. This fact is further explored in Origen's reply to the allegations of Celsus, and in his answer we can see revealed the true mission of the genuine Christian church that was ordained by Jesus and his apostles. Origen responded to the allegation of Celsus by explaining that, "For there are in the divinity of the Word some helps towards the cure of those who are sick," meaning the sinners. Origen then clarifies his statement and writes that these sinners are by no means invited to participation in mysteries, then, and to fellowship in the wisdom hidden in a mystery, which God ordained before the world to the glory of His saints. To demonstrate the biblical foundation of this great truth in Origen's reply to Celsus, we can see the same exact message in the assertion of Paul that there were different doctrines, that is, the milk for the carnal believer, the lesser mysteries for the seeker, and the deeper realities of the spirit for the genuine Christian of which Origen wrote. Now, in answer to such statements, we say that it is not the same thing to invite those who are sick in soul to be cured, and those who are in health to the knowledge and study of divine things. We, however, keeping both these things in view, at first invite all men to be healed, and exhort those who are sinners to come to the consideration of the doctrines which teach men not to sin, and those who are devoid of understanding to those which beget wisdom, and those who are children to rise in their thoughts to manhood, and those who are simply unfortunate to good fortune, or which is the more appropriate term to use, to blessedness. And when those who have been turned towards virtue have made progress, and have shown that they have been purifying by the word, and have led as far as they can a better life, then and not before do we invite them to participation in our mysteries. For we speak wisdom among them that are perfect. As the church became ruled by Roman emperors and carnal priests, see Paul of Samosata, typical clergy. Among the mysteries that were concealed from the masses who were too carnal to receive the deeper truths of Christianity was the doctrine of the pre-existence of the soul.
Okay.
In his writing known as The True Word, Celsus accused the Christian church of teaching the masses the spurious doctrine of heaven and hell in an after-death state, while teaching the elect the doctrine of reincarnation. Though this may astonish the modern believer, Origen does not refute Celsus, but rather explains that, but on these subjects much, and that of a mystical kind, might be said, in keeping with which is the following: it is good to keep close the secret of a king. Tobit 12.
7.
In order that the doctrine of the entrance of souls into bodies, not, however, that of the transmigration from one body into another, may not be thrown before the common understanding, nor what is wholly given to the dogs, nor pearls be cast before swine. For such a procedure would be impious, being equivalent to a betrayal of the mysterious declaration of God's wisdom. What Origen was stating with respect to the teaching on the pre-existent soul that evolves to perfection over the course of many lives, this teaching, which is often portrayed as reincarnation, was not as important to be kept secret as the doctrine of the entrance of souls into bodies, which, according to Origen, may not be thrown before the common understanding, nor what is wholly given to the dogs, nor pearls be cast before swine. For such a procedure would be impious, being equivalent to a betrayal of the mysterious declaration of God's wisdom, and that many concepts of man's higher reality could not be revealed to the multitude of the believer community, was confirmed by Paul when he stated that it was unlawful for him to reveal the higher reality that he witnessed, that is, truths, which it is not lawful for a man to utter, 2 Cor 12, 2-4, to those he portrayed as being of a natural, organic mind. And this is why the first century elder Ignatius, as with all the biblical authors, understood that the mind of the believer must be matured in order to understand man's higher soul reality, as demonstrated when he wrote in his epistle to the Trelawes that, "Might I not write to you things more full of mystery? But I fear to do so, lest I should inflict injury on you who are babes. Pardon me in this respect, lest, as not being able to receive their weighty import, yea, should be strangled by them." That organic, natural man is incapable of comprehending his own higher soul reality is confirmed by Paul when he stated, "But the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, nor can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned." 1 Cor 2:14. And if we pose the question as to why higher soul and spiritual reality is seen as foolishness to the mind or natural organic man, the profoundly important answer is found T.H. Jameson Fawcett Brown Bible Commentary, where it writes with respect to the meaning of the word natural in the original Greek language. Natural man literally, a man of animal soul.
Further,
the Treasury of Scriptural Knowledge states of this ignored and profound statement at 1 Cor 2:14, which reads, quoting Paul, "But the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned, wherein the proper interpretative meaning of Paul's words with respect to the reality of what is portrayed by Paul as the natural man is then presented. Psychikos, the animal man, one who lives in a natural state, and under the influence of his animal passions. For such means the inferior and sensual part of man, in opposition to the nous, understanding, or pneuma, the spirit. And this is not only true, but is a fact of life that all mystics and enlightened souls must deal with when interacting with organic man. W. Hat is the source of the portrayal of organic natural man as being of an animal soul level of consciousness. It is based upon the reality that man's lower nature is of an animal consciousness, that without being transformatively integrated with his higher soul and spiritual nature, can be portrayed as a beast that walks in the bodily form of man. And one of the primary objectives of the literal gospel message and teachings was to begin this transformative process that will begin to unite a person's lower earthly animal nature with his higher spiritual nature, thereby enabling the person to begin the transformative process of mental expansion and spiritual deepening. The Gospel of the Nazarenes explains this process of transforming our lower earthly/animal consciousness when Jesus said, "Love you one another and all the creatures of God. Yet I say to you, not all are men who are in the form of man. Are they men or women in the image of God whose ways of violence, of oppression and wrong, who choose a lie rather than the truth? No, truly, till they are born again and receive the spirit of love and wisdom within their hearts. Then only are they sons and daughters of Israel, and being of Israel, they are children of God. And for this cause came I into the world, and for this I have suffered at the hands of sinners." What this means is that those people personified as Israel in the scriptures are represented as those who have transformed the beast of their lower earthly/animal nature. And this is why the Jews who observe the scriptures outwardly in ritual and tradition are portrayed as the devil's spawn. See the devil's spawn. And this is why it is stated of the Jews in the Gospel of the Nazarenes, "For they, making a god of their belly, sacrifice to their god the innocent creatures of the earth, in place of the carnal nature within themselves, and eating of their flesh and drinking of their blood to their own destruction, corrupted their bodies and shortened their days, even as the Gentiles who did not know the truth, or who knowing it, have changed it into a lie." This reality that is further confirmed in the Gospel of Philip that explains this incomprehensible reality that is, a householder acquired everything, whether son or slave or cattle or dog or swine, whether wheat or barley or straw or hay or bones or meat or acorns. Yet he was wise and knew the food of each one. Before the sons he indeed set bread with olive oil and meat. Before the slaves he set castor oil with grain. And before the cattle he set barley with straw and hay. To the dogs he cast bones. Yet before swine, he threw acorns and crusts of bread. So it is with the disciple of God. If he is wise, he is perceptive about the discipleship. The bodily forms will not deceive him, but rather he will observe the disposition of the soul of each one in order to speak with him. In the world, there are many animals made in human form. These he is accustomed to recognize.